are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 98. We are still the Only Thor podcast, hosted by a true descendant of Odin, and we're a proud member of the Comics Podcasts Network. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Great news, folks! Yeah, well, I'm pretty excited, actually. I'm trading in my 12-year-old for a younger model. I know that sounds rude, doesn't it? No, I'm really talking about my computer, and so this show is being recorded a week in advance because my new computer replacing my 12-year-old Dell, which has been a faithful workhorse, let me tell you. I have had no complaints about this computer. The problem is that it's so freaking old that it can't run new games or anything like that. So finally, after 12 long years, trading in my old computer for a newer model. At this point, I'm really afraid that if I keep it for any longer, it's going to start asking me for the car keys. And to be honest, I don't have a car. So what that means is that I'm recording a show in advance just in case setting up the new computer takes a little bit longer than it's supposed to. We have a week's worth of insurance. Hopefully we won't be delayed for any longer than that. I'm not anticipating any problem setting up the new computer. It's just that when you have the audio stuff in addition to the normal programs, that can take a little bit longer to set up. And of course, I'm getting used to a new operating system. At least I'm not using Windows Me anymore, which is what I was using when I first started doing podcasting. And then very shortly thereafter, upgraded to Windows XP. But now it's going to be like a Windows 8 box, and it's going to be a much, much nicer computer. And I don't anticipate any change in the quality of the show, though one would hope that it would be a little bit better. Anyway, so as a result of that, I'm recording this episode pretty much directly after the last one, and I haven't even edited the last one yet as I record this. So that means that I really don't have anything new to report, anything like that. I will remind people that a couple episodes from now, 2 weeks from now, episode number 100, we are going to be doing the Walt Simonson retrospective. And if you want to participate, please feel free to send your voice files, emails, whatever, to radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And that, of course, is also the email address that you can send the show comments. You can also join us on Facebook, on our Facebook page. And I know I plug that stuff all the time. Anyway, we're going to be continuing on where we left off last week. So let's just move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold
Incidentally, the issue that we're covering this episode has been reprinted. You can find this in The Essential Thor, Volume 3, and also in the Marvel Masterworks Thor, Volume 7. And we are indeed covering Thor number 154. This issue has a cover date of July of 1968. Retailed for 12 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby and Vince Coletta. And we have Thor on the cover, kind of running out at us in full color, and in the background we have scenes from inside the issue, though they're not like photostats from the inside the issue. It looks like he actually drew them separately from the inside of the issue. So we see in the background, and the background is colored like this sort of ugly jade puke green color, while Thor is in his normal colors. But there are scenes we see Don Blake at the bedside of Sif. We see Baldur and Carnilla, and it looks like she's opening a curtain to a stage, and there's these warrior guys dancing behind it. We have Loki sitting on a throne, looks like Odin's throne, and we have Hela making an appearance here over here in the lower right. And above Thor's head, we see Ulic the troll fighting against this weird alien-looking dude. A guy with a big, large head and kind of oddly misshapen hands. And I guess we'll find out what that's all about once we get into the issue. So we open up to the splash page where we have the credits. Mylon Stanley and Jolly Jack Kirby produced this issue. Vinnie Coletta was the inker and Artie Simek was the letterer. Stan Lee presents The Mighty Thor in To Wake the Man-Gog. Ooh, the Man-Gog. Yeah, I've been kind of waiting for him. And so we open up the story where we left off last time. Remember, Loki and Thor had been fighting, but the Allfather Odin got a little bit pissed about that and made them stop. They didn't stop fighting. He was going to turn the car around and go home. So we see Loki kind of running away from the scene of the battle, and Thor's standing there just kind of telling us what happened last issue. He says, "Omnipotent Odin hath stayed my hand whilst I did battle with the merciless Loki. But why? What dire calamity hath made the All-Highest thus spare the Prince of Evil?" And to find out, we need to turn the page. And Thor's puzzled as to why he's not hearing anything from above, you know, where Odin is. He's like, "Mine ears hear no reply, mine eyes behold no sign. 'Tis not yet meet that the God of Thunder shall know his father's wishes. Thus let me away to yonder hospital, where the goddess Sif now lies recovering from Loki's onslaught." While he lands in the hospital, he's coming in through the window like he always does. He's being kind of whiny Thor here. It says, "Oh, most perfidious brother, if the dark-haired daughter of Asgard succumbs to her injury, how thou shalt thou pay in most full measure?" And he comes into the hospital room through the window, but everything is fine and dandy there, and Sif is sleeping, and he notices that her fever is gone, and therefore, I guess she's getting better from whatever this injury was. Thor saying, "She who hath offered up her very life for mine shall one day learn how grateful Thor can be." Ooh la la. And now Thor's checking her medical charts, and which looks very odd, but I guess it does make sense. It's like, "Though the eyes of a thunder god now peruse my lady's medical report, 'twill require the mortal brain of Dr. Donald Blake to comprehend what it doth signify." Now, this is something that's a little bit different, because I think that in the past it's been portrayed that Thor and Don Blake actually share memories. So really, in theory, Thor should be able to perform surgery or other medical procedures, but yeah, obviously not the other way around. I mean, Don Blake can't do what Thor can do. Thor's reading the medical chart, and he hears a voice. It says, "'Tis not the earthly physician I seek, son of Odin." That voice, it can belong to none but Hela, goddess of death. And Hela is in the room, and this is kind of cool, actually. She's not wearing what we're used to seeing her wear. You know, we're seeing Hela, usually she's dressed in the sort of green and black, with the big black antler things coming out the side of her head. This costume's really different for her. It's sort of this magenta and pink, and it still has these sort of protrusions off the head, but they're very different from anything we've seen her in before. And of course, she has this big blue cape, so it's kind of tacky, but you know, hey, it's 60s Marvel Comics, so of course it's tacky. Thor's alarmed by the fact that Hela's here. "Stand thee fast, most awesome one." Dude, she's totally awesome. "Thou hast no claim upon the stunning Sif. She did but suffer wound in battle. I know she shall recover." "Not she have I come for, gallant one. Can it be thou hast so soon forgot?"
"Nay, thou didst claim me once, but thou shalt do so no more."
"True, I did lose my power over thee when I turned away. Now thou mayest live until thou art mortally wounded once again, when I shall summon thee anew."
"Then why art thou here?" I was just about to ask the same question. Why the hell is she here, then? "Why do I gaze upon thine ominous visage?"
"Since I almost had thee for mine own, now come I to show what thou hast but postponed. Behold the promised glory of Valhalla."
And she waves her hand, and it's like this panorama appears, and it's like she's opened up like this dimensional gateway or something. And we see in the gateway all these warriors, and they're marching off into battle. And she says,
"'Tis here thy destiny eternal doth await thee. Do but say the word, and everlasting battle can be thine."
And Thor's like, "The son of Odin fights for purpose, never pleasure."
And he hears a voice coming from inside the portal, and that's somebody familiar. He says,
"God of Thunder, join us.
'Tis thy once and former foe, Hyrrokin, who calls thee." Yay, Hyrrokin.
"Eagerly we await thee, for thou art surely mightiest of all."
And he's got this sort of yellow Kirby crackle surrounding him, and he looks really happy to be there. And the Valhalla people are cheering Thor. "All hail, most noble Thor! Of all who lived, 'tis only thee who art most truly fit to be our leader. Thou hast but to command, and we shall follow thee in endless battle, to glory everlasting."
And Thor's like, "Ye who do me honor, ye who art bravest of the brave, attend to my words. Though thy warrior blood be my warrior blood, I say thee nay. Though I be sorely tempted, to thee I say, begone. Whilst evil doth endure amongst the living, the place for Thor is here. So be it. 'Tis ended.
The wraiths are gone, and with them, Hela. So it's kind of a little bizarre scene, and you kind of wonder why it's even in here. I think it's like in there to take up two pages. We then shift scenes to Ulic. Remember, he is falling down the bottomless pit, but he manages to grab onto the side and drag himself into this cave full of mysterious glowing rocks. He's now kind of pulled himself up onto the ledge, and he's exploring a little bit of where he is.
They tried to kill me, but they could not. My power was too much for them. And now Ulic will return to exact his murderous revenge. None but Ulic have ever before escaped from the deadly endless fall. But what is this mystic cave in which I find myself? What are these strangely shining stones? Wait, I seem to remember an ageless legend. A legend of hidden enchanty stones.
Enchanty stone.
Which are the gleaming seeds of Odin's supreme power.
Nah, the joke is too easy. I'm not going to bother. he sees a, like a metal door in this cave is surrounding by all these glowing rocks. And on this metal door is written in English, "Let no living being disturb what lies within, by order of Imperial Odin." And Ulic, of course, he can't resist breaking the rules. So he's like,
"I was right. I have found the long-lost Odin cave, wherein lies buried the last remaining member of a mysterious alien race. A race so powerful that it almost succeeded in destroying Asgard itself. If Odin himself feared him enough to seal him within a hidden cave, his power must be beyond description. And any who is an enemy of Asgard must be an ally of Ulic, mightiest of all the trolls. Whoever he is, whatever he may be, Ulic will set him free."
And Ulic is digging the door out from underneath all these glowing rocks, and he's just kind of pitching these rocks away. And then with a mighty blow, Ulic smashes down this big door. Now, if this alien inside were so strong, why the hell didn't he break out himself? Good question there. And anyway, we see now what is behind the door, and Ulic is confronted with this rather bizarre-looking creature. Well, it is kind of humanoid, and it is bright yellow skin, but a really bright red head. Now, the cool thing about it is he doesn't have necessarily a very conventional human form. His head is way, way, way too big for his body. It looks like he's about to topple over onto his face. And he's kind of this misshapen-looking thing. He's got these very alien-looking hands and feet. They have like these segmented claw things attached to them. So he's got like three fingers and three toes. And he's got like horns, like cow horns on the side of his head, and sort of a Egyptian looking beard thing sticking out of his chin. And he's got this really bizarre look to him. And it's just one of these character designs that Jack Kirby used to do that just really is incredible. I mean, it is so weird looking that only Kirby could have come up with it. And I know that in later iterations of this character, the artist tended to portray him with a little bit more normal proportions. So he didn't have this enormous head. But I like the enormous head Mangog. I think that looks pretty cool. So Mangog is confronting Ulic, and he says,
"Let the universe tremble. The Mangog lives again. I have one goal, one aim, one destiny. To destroy him who crushed the invasion of my race."
"You are bested by the legions of Asgard, and 'tis Odin who leads them still," says Ulic.
And Mangog comes tromping out of this cave where, say, we see he has a tail as well. And he's wearing pink shorts, which, I kind of wonder where he got these shorts. And Ulic is talking to him.
"I am Ulic, champion of the trolls. Under my leadership, we will annihilate Asgard together."
"Asgard? Mangog will not stop with Asgard. Mangog is the foe of all who live."
And he smacks down Ulic really, really easily. And Ulic's like,
"Art thou mad? It was I who freed you."
"The Mangog knows no gratitude, no mercy. Still, you will live a while longer, for even one such as you may prove useful to me."
And we then shift scenes back to Earth, and Thor is in the hospital room with the Lady Sif, and he's grateful, you know, that she seems to be recovering. He says,
"All seems well.
With Hela gone, 'tis certain that Lady Sif hath passed the crisis. No longer is there need for Thor, and now another may serve her best. 'Tis more than strength, 'tis a physician's skill she doth need, the skill of Dr. Don Blake. And he bangs his hammer on the ground and changes back into Dr. Blake. And as he does so, the door opens and the nurse is coming in with, looks like, bottles of aspirin and salt and pepper. I'm not sure what this is supposed to be. And she comes in and says, "Oh, doctor, I didn't know you were here. I've been on duty right outside all night. I could have sworn that no one entered this room."
"But obviously, it would seem you're mistaken."
"Yes, sir, I suppose I am. You know, Dr. Blake, everyone has been wondering about the identity of your patient. She's so very lovely, and yet she seems so distant."
"You know, maybe because she's freaking unconscious, she seems distant."
"That's understandable, nurse. I've heard she comes from far away."
"Look, she's opening her eyes for the first time. It's just as though the sound of your voice, 'My loved one, where art thou?' Her speech, it sounds so archaic."
"It doesn't matter how she said it. She's going to be all right, nurse. Do you hear? She's going to be all right." And he looks positively gleeful. And the nurse is kind of, it's like, it's like,
"I think I'd better continue on my rounds."
And she goes away. And Sif hugs Dr. Blake. And he says,
"'Twas thee who saved me from Loki's eternal blast. Though thou hast changed to mortal form, still does thy Lady Sif call thee her beloved."
"Careful, young lady. You're supposed to be resting." "But then again, I guess this is just as good a way to rest as any."
"Far better than most, say I."
"But we mustn't forget, I'm your doctor, and I'm prescribing a good night's sleep while I attend to some unfinished business."
"Be thou careful, my lord, for Loki still is free."
And he changes into Thor off-panel, and we see him flying over the city. And we see Loki. He flies past where Loki is hiding, and Loki is lurking in an alleyway, and he's used some sort of a spell to make himself invisible so we can see through him. You know how invisible people look in comics. And Thor's flying overhead, but he doesn't see Loki. And Loki is kind of shouting, and all the people are reacting to him. I kind of wonder why Thor doesn't hear this too. Anyway, Loki is thinking to himself,
"Not even Thor can find me now, for I am bathed in an aura of spatial invisibility."
And then he steps out of the alleyway and becomes visible and starts shouting out loud.
"But I still possess the enchantment of the Norns. I still possess power and a hatred that knows no bounds. Thus Loki shall hide no more. Let my spell of invisibility fall away. Begone, thou puny mortals. I have had a know of thy witless babbling and startled glances."
And he's like, "Boo, blah, blah, blah." And they all go running away down the street.
"So long as Odin rules, I am forbidden to engage in battle with the god of thunder. But what if Odin were to rule no more? Even the mightiest may fall victim to Loki's cunning."
And we see him kind of exploding in Kirby Crackle, and he goes and transports himself back to Asgard. And we see Loki kind of comedying through the cosmos, and of course this incredible Kirby space that's around Asgard. And he's kind of making his way back to the Eternal City. It says, "Whilst Thor remains upon far distant Midgard, I shall return to the Golden Realm, and there Loki will work his evil wiles." And he lands in Asgard, and we see lots of soldiers getting ready for war. And they're kind of charging down the street here as Loki arrives. And Loki is describing this for us, because we don't know what's going on.
"What in mine eyes behold? The flower of Odin's private guard charging out for combat. So this is why he halted my battle with Thor. A new danger hath now arisen. But what can it be to cause measures such as this?"
So a hand reaches out and claps Loki on the shoulder, and it turns out that it's Tog, the Elder of the Council Supreme. So I guess this is sort of the Vizier character that he's got kicking around this issue. And,
"Son of Odin, 'tis good thou hast returned. The realm hath great need of thy strength and thy mystic prowess. Tog, Elder of the Council Supreme."
Yeah, that's what I said.
"What menace hath so speedily arisen?" "'Tis the hidden cave of ages. It hath been opened at last. 'Twas created by Odin. Can he not close it once again?" "'Tis not so simple, my prince. Within the cave dwelled—" "Hold! The eternity alarm doth sound once more. The cave is empty. Its captive gone."
And there's this statue, and it looks like this sort of black demon bird thing, and it's like a fire alarm. It's a smoke. It's screaming out, and everyone's covering their ears.
Loki's like, seal fast the door. The deafening shriek doth offend the ears of Loki. Whatever may be amiss, Odin will set to rights. Not so, my lord. Follow me. Tog will show thee.
And he takes him into Odin's bedchamber, where we see Odin himself asleep in his racing car bed. Well, it's not really a racing car bed. It's his Viking ship bed. Kind of like what we saw before. And he's, at least this time, he's not dressed in a onesie, because that looked really stupid. He's actually dressed in some sort of, looks like Inuit clothing with a fur hat. The hat looks the same as the one he had on last time. But anyway, is it just me, or does Odin just always pick the worst time to go to sleep? So Tog is describing what's going on here. Says,
now in Asgard's greatest hour of peril, him who is the all-powerful, the all-wise, the all-supreme hath been taken to his bedchamber. For he needs must sleep the Odin sleep, the sleep which gives him life renewed. Then that is why Thor and I are needed.
And he's thinking to himself,
but Thor is still on Earth, and there let him stay.
And they go into the, I guess, the throne room, and Loki's like,
with my regal father sleeping the great Odin sleep, and with my uncaring brother absent from the realm, know you all that Loki now doth rule. Asgard at last is mine!
And you get a close-up of Loki's face here, and he's thinking to himself,
this time I shall gain control forever, or if I fail, the realm will topple with me.
And we then shift scenes back to Earth and Thor, and he's kind of leaping around the city and looking. He's looking for Loki, looking in the wrong place, obviously. And he happens across his gang of toughs, kind of typical, like, rat pack looking dudes. And they're mugging this businessman type in an alleyway. Thor's like, a stifled cry from yonder alley. Never will it cease to amaze me how mortals ever prey upon each other.
Hold him still while I grab his wallet.
Hey, look, up there in the sky. It's.
And Thor lands and he smashes the ground with his hammer, sending everybody flying, and says,
men call me Thor.
No matter what his name is, get him, Joe.
And Joe, I guess, is this one guy who's shooting at Thor, but Thor is deflecting the bullets with his hammer with a spewing. And he's like,
it's no good. He blocked me with that hammer. Quick, try it again. I'll hold him long enough for you to get another shot off.
It looks like he's using a German Luger. Jack Kirby is not known for drawing realistic guns or anything like that. So this one actually looks like something out of a Sergeant Fury comic. So one of the guys is tackling Thor, and Thor flings the guy over his shoulder, judo throw, and smashes the guy holding the gun with his friend. And Thor's like, none can hold the God of Thunder. And with a fatak, he smashes him down. And the guy who just got smashed down on his friend gets up and runs away. And Thor's like, one seeks refuge in desperate escape. But mortal limbs have not the strength, nor mortal legs the speed, to outdistance fabled Mjolnir. And he whirls his hammer around. And Thor pitches his hammer at the mugger, who's running away. And the hammer hooks onto the guy's leg and drags him back to Thor. And meantime, one of the other guys has gotten in a car, and he's trying to run Thor down. And he's like,
just stay where you are, mister. There's more than one way to skin a cat. Next time, you'll know better than to interrupt another guy's caper. Except in your case, there ain't gonna be a next time.
And Mjolnir we see returning to Thor's hand, and Thor just reaches out and stops the car, which I have to say is one of the tackiest cars I've ever seen. It's like this hot pink colored car with a baby blue roof. It's like, ew. I wouldn't want to drive that car. It doesn't matter now because nobody will be driving that car. Thor has lifted the car up and he's torn out like all the innards, all the transmission and stuff. And his friend is like, you got him, Ricky. Doesn't realize what Thor is doing. Thor's ripping apart the car. And he's like, the futility of thine act is matched only by the evil in thy soul. Didst thou think so scurvy an attack could stop the God of Thunder?
It ain't possible. He's still standing.
And he drags the guy out of the car.
Lego, don't hurt me.
We didn't mean no harm. Honest, yeah, right. Like, you just didn't try to run him over with your car.
We was just kidding. Horsing around. That's all.
And Thor's like, you liar. One of the cops comes up and says,
hold him, Thor. We've been looking for these creeps.
They call themselves Muggers Incorporated. You help make the streets a lot safer in this town, big fella. And he's got all the muggers up against the wall, and he's got his gun pulled on him, and he's, I guess, going to arrest them all. And Thor says, "They be not worthy of human form. Whilst men strive for the stars, theirs is the coat of the jungle. They are fit for naught, save the cage thou callest prison. And that's where they're headed," says the cop. And Thor, guess, kind of wanders away, and he's kind of pondering out loud to himself in his kind of dense manner. "Poor stumbling humanity, so frail, so vulnerable thou art, and yet so valiant. Though immortality be denied thee, still thy struggling race endures forever. But now must I resume my search for Loki. Yet my mind doth wander. Why hath Imperial Odin been so strangely silent?" Which is, okay, kind of weird because, remember at the end of last issue, he was shouting at them. And probably, what, a half an hour or less has passed since then? He's wondering why Odin is so silent. Anyway, if something be amiss in Asgard, alas, no choice have I but to await my summons. And he comes across an alleyway, and there's these dudes hanging out there, and they are hippies, like in the grand 1968 hippie tradition, with the long hair, the sort of vaguely Indian-looking vest, and this guy is wearing like a Native American pendant. This other guy is wearing like military surplus clothes, and they've all got long hair, and basically you're a 60s stereotype of a dirty, smelly hippie. And the Thor is like, "Hast thou seen Loki, him whose very visage be evil incarnate?"
"What's the bit, man? How uptight can you be? Look, we don't groove your kind of scene. Like if some cat's bugging the establishment, that ain't our hang up. Tell it to the squares, Dad. We dropped out. I dig the hair and the guru getup, but that hammer's from nowhere, man."
"Thou deign to scoff at enchanted Mjolnir? Hey, that's wild. You even got a name for it. Since nothing doth impress thee, wilt consent to a simple test? Hey, he's putting us on. I do but place my mallet upon the ground, and defy thee to lift it from where it rests."
"Come on, man. Let's... Hey, what gives?
It's like welded to the spot.
Come, pull. That cat lifted it with one hand."
"Stand away, all. Though thou be truly pure of heart, in thine innocence thou art fair misguided. The true guru thou seekest doth lie within thyselves. Heed you now these words. 'Tis not by dropping out, but by plunging in into the maelstrom of life itself that thou shalt find thy wisdom. There be causes to espouse. There be battles to be won. There be glory and grandeur all about thee if thou wilt but see."
So Thor starts spinning his hammer around, creating the Ajax White Tornado. Looks like he's getting ready to head back to Asgard.
And Thor says, "Aye, there be time enow for thee to disavow thy heritage. Yea, thou mayest drop out forever once Hela herself hath come for thee. But so long as life endures, thou must live it to the full. Else thou art unworthy of the title man." And there's a big crackle of Kirby crackle lightning, and Thor is gone. And you kind of get a glimpse of him. I guess he's transported himself to Asgard, whatever. But anyway, he says, "Verily they have eyes, but seeth not. When life doth seem too much to bear, 'tis not time to renounce the struggle. The ostrich hides, the jackal flees, but man and God do persevere." And we then shift scenes back to the Norn Kingdom. And we have Baldur and Carnilla alone together. I think this might be the first time. Of course, they were alone together for a little bit of last issue. And they're walking down the hallway here in the Norn realm, and they're just kind of chatting. And Baldur's kind of antsy, doesn't want to stick around here. He's like, "Queen of the Norns, I may tarry here no longer. My soul doth sense grave danger festering within the hallowed walls of Asgard."
"But what if Carnilla too hath need of Baldur? Though I be queen of enchantment, my heart is the heart of a woman. And it doth beat for thee alone, brave Baldur."
"Speak no more, mystic maiden. Thine ardor is most unseemly, since deadly foes we are."
And I notice here that Kirby is drawing Carnilla much prettier than he has in the last few. She's looking a lot less wicked witch. So, I mean, her appearance has visibly changed between the last couple of issues and this one. Very, very not Endora in this issue. Though the hairstyle's about the same, but...
"What? You dare to spurn the love of Carnilla? No, you, Baldur, none may reject the Norn Queen's suit and live to boast of it. Behold, and she pulls the rope on a curtain. This is what we saw on the cover, like a stage curtain, and the door opens. See these warriors, motionless, lifeless, frozen for all eternity. They, too, have dared incurred my wrath. But not even they were reckless enough to spurn my queenly love.
And Baldur's like, the missing legion of the lost. At last, the mystery is solved. And this one guy is wearing this sort of yellow and white armor with this green helmet sort of thing. And then there's a red-haired dude with a beard. Kind of almost Iron Man armor with fur lining. There's another guy who looks a little bit like the Rhino from Spider-Man. He's got like a rhino horn in the front, and he's all armored up, and he's carrying like a bow staff. And then there's a guy who's kind of wearing this pink and orange sort of Magneto-looking armor. And beyond him, you can just kind of see the silhouette, but it looks like the Juggernaut. Baldur is looking at these guys all horrified, and Carnilla's like,
I caution thee, Asgardian, thou must make thy choice. Wilt thou accept my hand, or a fate such as theirs?
And Baldur's not having that. He's like, thou makest a mockery of thy suit. Love is less than love, if it not be freely given.
Thou art brave, noble Baldur, but the power is mine.
And Baldur starts to draw his sword. We then shift scenes back to the cave, where Ulic is fighting with the mighty Mangog. And the Mangog is climbing up out of the bottomless pit, and he's holding Ulic in his claws, though he were a doll. And he's kind of climbing his way out, and Ulic is thinking to himself, the Mangog lifts me from the pit as though I am weightless. Surely he is the master of 100 such as Ulic. Better I had perished than to set the Mangog free. In all the spinning cosmos, there can be no safety now. And Mangog's climbing up his way out of this giant pit, and he starts to shout,
hear me, Lord of Asgard, be ere thou art. The Mangog shall soon find thee, and then shall come thy Ragnarok, the death of all thy universe.
And we have a kind of shift back to Thor for one panel. And I want to know what he's standing on here, because it looks like it's supposed to be a building, but he's as big as the building. So it's not a chimney. I don't know what it looks like. It's supposed to be a building. So anyway, so Thor has grown to the size of a skyscraper, and he's standing on top of a building. And he's saying out loud, never hath my soul felt such dire apprehension. Where is thy summons, regal sire? Where is the voice of Odin? And that is Thor number 154. So as with a lot of these Lee Kirby issues, just action-packed, a lot going on, and a big contrast with what comics are like nowadays, where it's all written for the trade. Well, we have the first appearance of Mangog, and the very cool appearance it is. I like the really awkwardly proportioned Mangog that we have in this issue, where his head is as big as the entire lower part of his body, making him sort of peanut-shaped with this enormous head and a huge gaping mouth. It's creepy, and it's cool at the same time. Mangog has never been one of my favorite characters. My first exposure to the character was probably when I was about 13, when I first started picking up the Thor book. I'm pretty sure that they had a Mangog story in one of those early issues. And then what I've seen in various reprints. He really looks weird and funny looking in this issue, and it is kind of a shame that they didn't keep that very distinctive sort of odd giant head proportion as they went forward. They did make him more conventionally proportioned as we went on. Kind of the same was what they did with Ulic, who is not nearly as ape-like in this issue as he was in his first appearance. But I think that's just sort of the difference between different artists and their different styles. I'm sure that both Mangog and Ulic are going to look completely different next issue, because it's Kirby, and he didn't like drawing things the same way twice, as we found out. Writing, well, it's typical Stan Lee writing, kind of over the top, lots of bad Elizabethan English, and at least we didn't get any butchered Bible quotes this time. I think we're going to get one of those next time. But yeah, it's pretty good stuff, and I don't disguise my love for this 60s material, because it's so cheesy, and yet it's so good at the same time, and it's so much fun.
I love Thor's encounter with the hippies. A little bit preachy, but this was Stan Lee preaching to his readers. A lot of hippies read comics. And this would have been about the time period when these college students were starting to contact Marvel and talk about how they were grooving on his comics and so forth. Now, that being said, I don't think that Stan Lee really gets hippies at all. He doesn't seem to understand what the hippies were all about. And I think that his notion of the hippies as, you know, they're kind of tune in, turn on, drop out, was sort of thinking that they were giving up on life. And I don't think that that's what the hippies really stood for. Now, that being said, I don't think that Jack Kirby in his writing really got the hippies anymore. I mean, just look at the Forever People. Though I think the Forever People were probably closer to a hippie ideal than these characters who are just kind of hanging around in this alley. I can kind of see it. It's interesting that they had these kind of throwaway scenes in here where we had, you know, the muggers, Thor stopping a few muggers. That would be a whole issue now. And then the lecture to the hippies, that would be a whole nother issue. And then, you know, these are just things that took up like 3 pages each out of the issue. So it's really interesting to see the difference in the storytelling. All right, so with that, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. Thanks very much again, folks, for listening. Next week, I'll be back. We have a Norse myth, of course, next week, so look forward to that. And it'll be the first podcast recorded on the new computer. All right, so with that, I will see you next week. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.